Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Charlie Cook of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. We start with the good. And, Charlie, we learned today that the federal government is planning to pursue the death penalty in its case against suspected Boston Marathon bomber Dzhokhar Tsarnaev. Of course, his brother was killed in the hunt for them back in April. We saw the whole shutdown of the Boston metro area. I believe it was three people dead, scores injured, lots of amputations. It's obviously a terrorist attack, one that the administration admits was a terrorist attack. So the good news here on a couple of fronts, as far as we can tell from a conservative perspective, number one, if there was ever a case that warranted the death penalty, this is certainly it. And an administration that's not real fond of capital punishment is actually invoking it in this case.
I am rather surprised to see that. When I read the news yesterday, I thought that they would find a way around this. Of course, it remains to be seen whether they'll do it once they've got the verdict that they'll probably get. I'm funny about the death penalty myself. I think you and I probably disagree on it. But I have to say, if there is one thing in recent memory that would warrant an execution, it would be deliberately placing a bomb at a marathon next to an 8-year-old boy and killing and maiming scores of people, shooting police officers, causing damage to millions of people's lives. What happened was absolutely heinous. This possibly, and I find myself conflicted on this, but this possibly is what the death penalty is for.
And so do you think that the Justice Department will ultimately waffle on this? What do you think ultimately is going to happen here?
Well, I think it's probably worth saying on that that there will, of course, by the time he comes to be executed, be a different president. It will be very difficult for them to walk back. I wouldn't be surprised to see those who are involved when it comes to it say they made a mistake or they don't think he should be executed or even argue for his sentence to be commuted to life in prison. But if we have another president by then, it would be very difficult for them to do anything about it.
Well, Charlie, as we head to the bad martini here now, we kind of foreshadowed it perhaps in a way with our good martini from Thursday, and that's that it looks like Democrats more and more are coming to the realization they're probably not going to win back the House, so they're putting all their financial and strategic eggs into the basket of saving the Democratic majority in the Senate, and that's not sitting real well with longtime Democratic House members. We've seen a number of high-ranking of folks with a lot of seniority call it quits already this year. George Miller of California is one that comes to mind. Yesterday, we find out that Henry Waxman, who has represented Hollywood for the past 40 years, if there's any person in Congress who immediately makes you think of Hollywood, it's probably not Henry Waxman. Yeah. But he has been a powerful figure on the Oversight Committee on Energy and Commerce. And in that role, he played a leading role in drafting Obamacare. He's now leaving because he just senses there's not enough bipartisanship in Washington, which I know has been a real concern of his when the Democrats have been in the majority. Charlie, you wrote at length yesterday about not just his incorrect positions on most issues from a conservative perspective, but something even far more dangerous about how he sees the separation of powers.
Yes, well, I might start before I get to that by saying that it's good that the guy has gone. He has served 20 terms. Let's just put that out there for a moment. He is a 20-term congressman, and I think that's 40 years. That is absolutely enough. Whether one believes in term limits in a legal sense or not, there are precedents in this country, good precedents, people stepping down after a while. And 40 years is absolutely too much. So good that he's gone. And it's interesting to see how many of the original Obamacare architects have gone, either because they have refused to run because they know they'll lose, or because their work is done, or because they've lost their seats. Maybe we'll see more of those people removed this year in the Senate. And in terms of Waxman in particular, he was a powerful man in Congress. And one of the things that he did in recent years was to transfer much of the legislature's power to the executive in the area of environmental law. He was one of the key voices behind moving EPA regulations to the executive branch and allowing them to act on things like fuel regulations without Congress. Now, that is a bad idea in and of itself, but to have a member of the legislature deliberately stripping that body of some of its power is bizarre. The Constitution works on the basis that each individual will be jealous of their influence and their power and fight with the other branches. That's the only way that it can work. But this sort of collusion that we've seen recently, and it should be said from both parties, Republicans did it while Bush was president too, is unhealthy for the system. It damages oversight, and it changes the manner in which people are represented and process works. So just for that alone, good riddance to Henry Waxman and to anyone else who thinks that their job is to advance their agenda in any way rather than uphold the Constitution they swore to do.
Yeah, so the good news on a number of fronts, as you've explained, is that Henry Waxman will be leaving at the end of the year. This is a deeply blue district, though, so don't get hopes of electing a Republican there under any likelihood. In fact, one thing we're already hearing, Charlie, is that contraception advocate Sandra Fluke, or Fluck, depending on how folks pronounce her last name, is seriously mulling a bid for the seat. I'm sure you're excited about that.
Well, I'm sure that if she wins the primary, that she'll win the seat and go to Congress. She doesn't particularly bother me. She is something of a clown. I would say one thing to conservatives, though. They ought to just be quiet and let her do it. There's nothing that would be more likely to get Sandra Fluke elected to the United States Congress than if conservatives make an issue out of this and, you know, inevitably someone says something stupid or, frankly, offensive about her. I think she's a clown. I think she's a fool. I don't think she has any great redeeming qualities, but there's no need for us to go too far, as we often do. And I think if we do, we might well find she's selected.
All right. On to the third martini now. And Charlie, ever since 9/11, we've been wrestling with the liberty and security balance. And a lot of people are, of course, hoping that you don't have to give up one to get the other. But we're hearing now from a longtime TSA agent that our worst fears about the nudie scanners, as some people call them, the X-ray technology, perhaps is the more formal name, is just as invasive and just as uncomfortable as we all suspected that it was. This is from a lengthy piece for Politico magazine, and I'll read a couple of parts here. First of all, on the personal front, quote, "Most of my coworkers found humor in the image operator room on a cruder level. Just as the long-suffering American public waiting on those security lines suspected, jokes about the passengers ran rampant among my TSA colleagues. Many of the images we gawked at were of overweight people, their every fold and dimple on full awful display. Piercings of every kind were visible. All sorts of other things, stereotypes about race and genitalia," he says. And then if that's not offensive and troubling enough, he says from the get-go, "they knew they didn't work. We knew the full-body scanners didn't work before they were even installed. Officers discovered that the machines were good at detecting just about everything besides cleverly hidden explosives and guns. The only thing more absurd than how poorly the full-body scanners performed was the incredible amount of time the machines wasted for everyone." I guess we are right, Charlie, but it doesn't change the fact that all this happened. It doesn't change the fact that a lot of this is still going on.
No, we were right. The balance between liberty and security is a tough one for a society. I most often come down on the side of liberty myself, in part because I don't trust the government. And having listened to what we've just, there's good reason for that. But really, this is not a question now of liberty versus security. It's a question of liberty versus inefficiency, waste, and corruption. The TSA has had $60 billion spent on it since 2002. It now employs more than 65,000 people, which is more than about half of the government departments in Washington put together. These people have formed a union, funneling money to Democrats, of course, and back to the government that employs them, and securing terms that mean their jobs are easier and less efficient in the way that unions always do. So we have instituted this great security theater, as it's often called, at great expense to ourselves that isn't actually helping. And we are accustomed to hearing stories, individual stories, people getting guns onto airplanes, people having guns, loaded guns in their hand luggage. One of the guys from Mythbusters, if you remember that story, managed to get two 12-inch blades onto the plane that was taking him to a TED talk. And the first thing he did when he was there was walk on and say, "Bring them out of his belt." He said, "I just flew with these," and it gasps from the audience. This is not an isolated incident. This is how the system is set up, and it needs to be abolished.
And so it's what many people feared. It's all about show and not necessarily results, because as the story says, the trainer even admitted that they wouldn't be able to distinguish plastic explosives from body fat, and that guns were practically invisible if they just were turned sideways in a pocket. So billions of dollars, thousands of personnel. And as far as I know, Charlie, and I could be wrong here, they have confiscated things, but actual proof of a foiled plot via the TSA? I don't think we have one, do we?
No, and there was a team the government sent in to test the system. I think it was called the Red Team. And they secreted fake IEDs, aesthetically identical but non-functioning IEDs, about their body. The guy put them in his pants. He went through the system, and he not only passed the scan in the machine, but he passed a pat-down. This was the government's own people testing this system. This is rife.
Wow. Just unbelievable. Charlie, on that note, I don't know if you're a huge American football fan, but if you are, or even if you're not, who do you like this weekend?
I am going to back Colorado this weekend. I do like American football, but I especially like American football on the Super Bowl because everyone's watching it. It's a big event, eat, drink, and spend some time with friends and my new family over here. So I'm with Colorado, and I'm hoping they're going to do it.
All right, so Charlie's on the Broncos. Looks to be a very competitive game, the top offense against the top defense, and I'll be pulling for Denver as well. Not sure if they'll pull it off, but that's who I'll be rooting for. Charlie, have a great weekend. Thanks, as always, for filling in.
Absolutely. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the game.
Thank you, sir. Charlie Cook of National Review and for Jim Garrity today. Please join Jim and me on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.